Welcome to the Sleep is a Skill podcast. My name is Molly McLaughlin, and I own a company that optimizes sleep through technology, accountability, and behavioral change. Each week, I'll be interviewing world-class experts ranging from doctors, innovators, and thought leaders to give actionable tips and strategies that you can implement to become a more skillful sleeper. Let's jump into your dose of practical sleep training. Welcome to the Sleep is a Skill podcast. My guest today is Danielle Hamilton, and this was a real treat for me because she's actually a very close friend of mine, and I love her passion and the work that she does on the ground with individuals on helping to really make a huge difference in their blood sugar and the ways of managing their blood sugar, awareness that they might have a problem, or if they know they have a problem, wild steps to take, many steps that they can take so that they feel certainly empowered and that there's so much that they can do to improve this area of life. And as many of you that have listened for quite some time, you're likely aware that blood sugar dysregulation can absolutely show up in your sleep results. So this is a really important conversation that I hope if you're listening that you're either taking this for yourself or if other individuals that are struggling that you share this information, because I really believe that this can make such a difference for so many of us on so many levels, but certainly with our sleep. So a little bit about Danielle Hamilton. She is a functional nutritional therapy practitioner and restorative wellness practitioner who specializes in blood sugar regulation and digestion. She became interested in blood sugar issues when she learned that insulin resistance was at the root of her PCOS. She was able to reverse her PCOS, cystic acne, PMS, and weight loss resistance by reversing insulin resistance. Her mission is to help others uncover their blood sugar and insulin issues, as most people don't know the early signs, and as well as help them optimize digestion for low-carb diets. Danny promotes a holistic approach to reversing insulin resistance, which goes beyond just changing macros. She is the host of the Unlock the Sugar Shackles podcast and the creator of the Blood Sugar Mastery Program. I think you're going to really love her energy. Certainly check out her podcast and make sure to check out her Instagram as well. It has tons of resources. She puts those out really routinely. So I think you're going to really enjoy certainly at least starting there. And if not, making sure that you follow her podcast. She also has a newsletter. I think many of you listen to or are subscribed to our newsletter that comes out every Monday. She has also created something similar. So that comes out every Monday for her as well. So that's absolutely a chock full of ton of resources. So don't hesitate to sign up for all the things. Okay. And without further ado, let's jump into the podcast. So I get a lot of questions around sleep supplements, and I'm very hesitant to just throw out a whole laundry list of possibilities. One, I don't think it's the most responsible thing to do. I really do believe in testing to see what types of supplements make sense for you. And two, because I really truly believe that most of the things that you can do to improve your sleep are behavioral, psychological, environmental in nature, and often don't cost a dime. However, there is one supplement that I personally take every day and that I do feel quite comfortable with suggesting for most individuals to experiment with because of a couple of reasons. It's high safety profile and high rates of deficiencies in our modern society. Some put the numbers as somewhere around 80% of the population being deficient in this one area, and that is magnesium. So magnesium has been called the calming mineral, and some report that magnesium can increase GABA, which encourages relaxation on a cellular level, which is critical for sleep. Magnesium also plays a key role in regulating our body's stress response system. Those with magnesium deficiency usually have higher anxiety and stress levels, which negatively impact sleep as well. Now, before you go out and buy a magnesium supplement, it's important to understand that most magnesium products out there are either synthetic or they only have 1 to 2 forms of magnesium, when in reality, your body needs all 7 forms of this essential sleep mineral. So that's why I recommend a product from my friends over at BioOptimizers. They have created something called the Magnesium Breakthrough. And taking this magnesium before bed helps you relax and wake up refreshed and energized. And while we don't recommend that you go too nuts on looking at all the sleep stage classifications on all your wearables, I will share anecdotally that many clients have reported improvements in their deep sleep trend numbers. Again, I don't want you going nuts on the sleep stage classification numbers on your wearables, but I do want to let you know about that because I know that many of you do reach out on questions of how to improve your deep sleep. So I also love that BioOptimizers offers free shipping on select orders, and they offer a 365-day money-back guarantee on all their products. Plus, they have a customer satisfaction rating of 99.3%. Very impressive. And you can get 10% off Magnesium Breakthrough. Again, this is the same magnesium that I use every single night. And finally, you can get 10% off Magnesium Breakthrough. Again, that's the magnesium supplement that I use every single night by going to magbreakthrough.com/sleep-as-a-skill. And be sure to use the code sleep-as-a-skill for 10% off. And welcome to the Sleep is a Skill podcast. Today's guest is a really great friend of mine, Danielle Hamilton, to be formal. Thank you so much for taking the time. This is going to be so much fun.
I'm so excited to be here, Molly. This has been a long time coming, and I'm honored to be on your show.
Yay! Amazing, amazing. You have just been a fast friend and with such kind of commonalities. We actually have had opportunities at different conferences to kind of room together, and the two of us really walk our talk and could just nerd out on all of our gadgets and things to do to help optimize our sleep and health. And, you know, this is going to be such a fun conversation, but also just a really important conversation. And I know you're rooted in a real clear mission for yourself and your life of sharing how you got into being kind of in a place of thought leadership on the regulation and monitoring and awareness of glucose and how that can really affect and insulin and how that can all affect your health and well-being and certainly your sleep. So I want to give you an opportunity to kind of share like how you got to this place and why you are so passionate.
Yeah, thanks, Molly. And yes, we certainly walk our talk in these in the hotel rooms with all our gadgets and our mouth tape. And I was like, oh no, this light is terrible. You're like, I have these travel red lights. I'm like, you are the best person to room with right now. Are you kidding me? I love it.
So and you're such a good partner for that too. Cause like, you know, they were able to manage how to like have fun, how to go out and about, invest in our social capital, quote unquote, but then also still get some good sleep and feel good at these conferences, you know. So it's an art form and really appreciate it.
It is for sure. I totally get that. And that's a great topic that we could definitely dive into later, how to find a balance in this world of being healthy, but also having fun because everyone loves to do things after the sun goes down. And I prefer to do things before the sun goes down, but that's a topic for another day. So So my story starts in childhood. I was kind of a sickly kid. I had a lot of colds and ear infections, lots of antibiotics, and I really loved processed breakfast foods. I was a big cereal head, oatmeal, Eggo waffles, toaster strudels. If it was a breakfast food, it had my name on it. And so I was into carbs, but also carbs with extra sugar on it. And I always thought that it was just because of my sweet tooth, right? Like I'm eating this way because of my tooth. Not surprisingly, started developing some other health issues as I got older. I was a senior in high school. I got strep throat 6 times that year. I had to get my tonsils out. I went to college. I started to develop seasonal allergies, like really, really badly. And I started to develop asthma, and I got a lot of sinus infections. Then I moved to Miami, where the season for allergies was year round. I found out I was allergic to even palm trees. I thought, this is a cruel joke. This can't be true. So I also always struggled with my weight. I struggled with acne, and I was really in a bad place in my early 20s with the allergies. I was having 3 medications, 2 inhalers. I was getting multiple allergy shots. I had to get 5 shots because I was allergic to so many things. And I was going broke on the copays. I mean, it was a mess. It was a nightmare. And no doctor could tell me why this was happening to me. And they certainly didn't have any other treatment ideas for me other than just keep taking these medicines, keep getting the shots. And I thought at the same time I was working as a speech therapist in a nursing home, and I thought so many of my patients have so many diagnoses, so many medications, and I'm in my early 20s, kind of, and I could see that if nothing changed, I would absolutely be on that trajectory to be in that bed, in that nursing home, at, you know, with all those medications, maybe even earlier than this group of people. And I just knew in my heart that there was something wrong. I was always asking questions, but never was satisfied by the answer. And so by the grace of the universe, I came across this book by Rob Wolf called The Paleo Diet Solution. And it basically took everything that I knew or thought I knew about nutrition that I had learned from conventional wisdom, from commercials and things like that. And I realized that, oh my goodness, I need to do the exact opposite of everything that they're saying. You know, don't avoid red meat, embrace red meat. Don't avoid salt, embrace salt. Don't have packaged food, have real food. So it was just all these opposite types of lessons. And I changed my diet to a whole foods paleo diet. I got out all the processed foods, and it was like a miracle. My health completely changed. I got rid of all my allergies, all my asthma issues, sinus infections, never had another sinus infection, got off all my medications. And I just wanted to shout this from the rooftops. And I definitely talked to more people who were not really interested in what I had to say. And I was like, you don't even understand. We've been lied to. And not everyone is ready to hear that. And now I respect that. Now I just yell into my own podcast mic when I have those feelings that I want to tell people things. So I was eating a really healthy paleo diet. I was doing well. And then all of a sudden I started gaining weight. I had a really stressful year and I was like, what's going on? I started to miss my period. It was 6 months and I didn't have a menstrual cycle. My acne that I had always kind of struggled with became all the time. It wasn't just cyclical. It was cystic. It was on different parts of my face that I had never had acne on, like on my cheeks. It was all over my forehead. I had no energy. And I was like, what's happening? This diet that I was eating just made me so healthy. And now is it causing these issues? And I just felt in my heart that it can't be real food that's doing this. You know, I'm eating real healthy foods from the earth. Like, what's happening? So I looked online and all of my symptoms lined up with polycystic ovarian syndrome or PCOS. And I went to a doctor and I said, I feel like I'm doing everything right. I'm eating well. I'm exercising. I can't lose weight no matter what I do. I think I have PCOS. Like, can you help me? And he said, you do have PCOS. You have to lose weight. There's no cure and you have to take the pill. I was like, wow, did I pay for this appointment? Did I just pay for you to tell me that?
Yeah.
So I took the prescription that he forced me to take. I ripped it up when I got to my car. I'm like, I'm not doing that. And I decided that I had more motivation than ever to fix it on my own. And so I was not able to make a dent in these symptoms. I kept trying to go after the hormonal imbalances that I was experiencing. I was having PMS, PMDD. I had the PCOS, anything apparently with an initial that starts with a P I had. And I was trying to, you know, take Vitex for my progesterone and take all these things to lower my estrogen and lower the testosterone. I could not make a dent in this to save my life. And I kept trying. I kept learning about nutrition. I was listening to all these podcasts and reading blogs, and I just couldn't figure it out until one day I was listening to a podcast and it was Megan Ramos. She works with Dr. Fung. And she said that PCOS is the diabetes of the ovaries. And I heard that and I was driving at the time and I almost ran my car off the road because I was just so flabbergasted that no one had ever mentioned anything about diabetes or blood sugar or insulin. And I, at the time, even though I knew a ton about holistic health, I knew nothing about blood sugar. So I thought to myself, okay, think about your clients, your patients with diabetes. What do you know? And if I had to write it down on a piece of paper, it would have been something about blood sugar, something about amputations. That's all I knew. I didn't know anything about blood sugar. I didn't know how this affected us in any way. So I had to dig in and see, do I have symptoms of blood sugar issues? What are the symptoms of blood sugar issues? I don't even know the symptoms of diabetes. And that's really progressed blood sugar issues. So how am I going to know earlier issues? So what I realized was that insulin resistance, which we can go into, is actually a major cause or driver of PCOS. So by working on the blood sugar and insulin stuff, I was able to reverse my PCOS. But again, these symptoms, I didn't know what they were. So I started to take an inventory and look at, after I learned about blood sugar symptoms, I said, what are the symptoms that I am experiencing? Because I have to be having some symptoms that I don't know about. So the sweet tooth, that's one of them. You know, I'm not eating because of my teeth. I'm eating because of my, you know, my physiology is driving that. And I was a person who used to wake up and I would be shaky. Like I needed to go immediately to go get something to eat. If I did any fasting blood work in the morning, I hated it because I hated how it made me feel. At that time, I was getting fasting blood work. My blood sugar was 60. That's very low. No doctor said anything to me. I had 3 instances of getting my blood work done and my blood sugar was 60 every single one of those times. Not one of those doctors, not one of the 3 said one thing to me about that. Meanwhile, I was dizzy. I was shaky. I felt like I was going to pass out. I felt like I need to get something to eat right now. It didn't feel like, oh, I'll just, you know, wait a few minutes and eat later. It was like, get me something right now. Felt very urgent. I was a person who needed to carry food with me when I left the house. I was always thinking about, okay, where can I eat? Where can I go to eat next? It was always a thought in my mind. I had to eat before I went out to eat because heaven forbid the food take too long, because I used to say I couldn't tolerate being hungry. And that's a huge sign that if your hunger is something that feels intolerable because it feels really bad in your body, like you're going to pass out, like you're going to get hangry, like you get anxious, that you feel shaky, you don't feel well, that's a sign of blood sugar dysregulation. Hunger should feel like, oh, yeah, I could eat. Oh, I think my stomach's growling. Like, no, I feel like I could eat. That is what hunger should feel like. That's healthy hunger. But unhealthy hunger comes with a lot of symptoms. And so what I had done sort of intuitively is be a person that grazed and ate and snacked all day on healthy foods. But I would do that to kind of self-medicate so that I didn't have these crashes or feel these symptoms of low blood sugar or hunger as I knew them to be. So after I realized that, I started to add more fats to my diet. I went keto. So I took my whole food paleo diet and just switched it to ketogenic macros. I dabbled with some fasting. I worked on my digestion and stress and sleep. And I got rid of all my PCOS symptoms. So I have none of those anymore. And so people don't like the word cure, and I'm not going to use that word, but I reversed it and I'm non-diagnosable PCOS. So that's the story.
Wow. Well, congratulations on that turnaround, but also I hear you that there was a lot of navigating and kind of personal responsibility and investigation that you had to bring into the conversation to figure out this. And so thank you for now helping Sherpa others on this process, because to your point, unfortunately, some of the doctors that you might come across might have no training in this or very little training, and not to knock them because they're trained in all these different areas. And unfortunately, certainly sleep is one of them, where often on average, the average primary care doctor, certain studies out of Harvard seem to point to that on average, they're getting around 2 hours or so training in sleep. And I would wager that there's something in the similar realm, certainly around nutrition at the very least. And then this topic of blood sugar might go more into the pathology realm versus just this in-between state that many of us are dealing with on a wide scale. So thanks so much for really putting a flag in on this topic and helping to guide people. And in case we didn't make it clear, how is sleep connected in this conversation? And what do you see there to kind of break that down a bit more?
Yeah. So what we know about sleep is that it is so essential for good blood sugar regulation. So even, I don't know the studies, but there's tons of them out there that show that even one night of poor sleep, I think you just posted about it in your newsletter, it causes more insulin resistance the very next day. And so chronic sleep deprivation, of course, would lead to a more chronic state of insulin resistance. Just even sort of just from a lived experience, if you have those nights where you're like, wow, I had a really terrible sleep, think about the foods and beverages that you were drawn to that day. They're always going to be high sugar, high caffeine beverage. It's just like, I need something. I need more coffee. I need a donut or I need something. And your body is looking for that fast, easy energy. And so from just a regular average Joe kind of perspective, you're going to be drawn towards wanting caffeine and sugar on those days where you don't get a lot of sleep. And then we also know, I love this, I got this from you, is that sleep and blood sugar have a bi-directional relationship.
Yes.
So our blood sugar is not only affected by our sleep, but also affects our sleep. So if you have blood sugar that throughout the day is having these highs and lows, which by the way, that's what the body doesn't like with when it comes to blood sugar. It doesn't like really high swings. It doesn't like low dips. It likes to stay in this nice sort of Goldilocks zone of like a happy medium, these little gentle hills and drops. It doesn't like sharp mountain peaks and ridges. And so if our blood sugar is doing that throughout the day, these highs and lows, then we're setting ourselves up to have trouble sleeping the next day or that night. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people that I see, they struggle with this condition called reactive hypoglycemia or even just hypoglycemia. And they have a lot of wake-ups in the middle of the night. So people wake up with a pounding heart and they think, oh, I'm having an anxiety attack. Well, you were just sleeping. You're not really anxious about much when you're sleeping.
Yeah.
And what it usually is a physiological anxiety provoking situation in the body, because what's happening is that the blood sugar is crashing. And when that happens, and if our liver is out of glycogen, which is stored sugar, it will tap in, it will say, hey, adrenals, you are our last chance. Our blood sugar is going down. And without you, we will die. So the adrenals kick in like this backup generator. And they're like, we got you. We're going to make some new glucose for your body. And it will elicit a big spike of epinephrine and norepinephrine, which is adrenaline. So you wake up with an adrenaline surge that's pumping your heart and your heart's beating out of its chest. And you think you had an anxiety attack, but really it was your blood sugar going too low. And for a lot of people, this happens after drinking alcohol as well. But again, this is another way how our blood sugar is affecting our sleep. So if we don't have good blood sugar regulation, if we have insulin resistance, it can really negatively impact that. And then the other thing is the tie with the blood sugar and the liver. So the liver is a major organ of blood sugar regulation, along with the adrenals and the pancreas. And the liver is very often affected in a negative way from having blood sugar dysregulation, insulin resistance. There's often fatty liver that comes with that. And that can cause wake-ups when our liver is not healthy. That can cause wake-ups. Usually it's between the hours of 1 and 3, I believe. Is that?
Often happen during that period. And for different people, depending on the different schedules, but very a common range for sure.
Yeah. So it has this bi-directional relationship. So what we want to do is work on, a lot of times working on both of these things at the same time, it's essential. You can't really work on one without the other, because if your blood sugar is a mess, but you're working on your sleep, it's going to be impacted and vice versa. So I see a lot of people who, I mean, and in general, a lot of people who do work on their blood sugar, they're like, I'm sleeping through the night. I'm not waking up anymore. And sometimes that's the ticket. I have a student who's in my program now, 73 years old. She had a fasting blood sugar of 140, which is in the diabetic range. It's now down to 83. Her blood sugar is in a perfect range all day, no more drops at night. And she said that she used to wake up every night and would be up for several hours. And since working on her blood sugar, she is now sleeping throughout the night, 2 hours and 40 minutes of REM sleep and 2 hours of deep sleep, according to her Fitbit watch. So, you know, we take it with a grain of salt, but I mean, for a 73-year-old, fantastic. Like, to me, amazing.
And even just the measurable shift, both subjectively and objectively, to sleep through the night. I mean, that alone is just such a game changer, especially as we get older. There's just more instances often of those wake-ups. So I think many people aren't quite aware of, because there's many reasons for wake-ups. And, you know, sometimes it can be layered and there can be a lot going on. It can be temperature stuff, light, you know, all kinds of stressors, whatever. But I think the blood sugar regulation piece is very much an under-realized element to that. We had a actually kind of informal look at using levels. And so people using CGMs there, but they're also using Oura Ring and kind of overlaying that data and seeing a tendency for some of those wake-ups to correspond with some of those drops in, you know, measurable blood sugar ranges. So really interesting stuff that does seem to come about. So if anyone's listening and they are just so frustrated with those wake-ups, really, really exploring this topic of blood sugar. So assuming that person's listening and saying, all right, yeah, I do have a sense that it's likely this is an area I could work on. If you can help guide us on what are some of the steps that you, for anyone, maybe they've never used a CGM, they've never used, you know, prick any blood, or they don't even know where to begin. How do we navigate this? What are like the most important steps to take?
Yeah. So the most important step is to, first off, getting one of these meters is really easy. So there's a bunch of companies now that will give you your prescription for continuous glucose monitors, or you can get the finger prick meter. Both are phenomenal for knowing what's going on and for a good start to taking the guesswork out, right? Like just like how you have your clients get Oura Rings, we need to be able to see what's happening instead of just guessing. So getting a glucose monitor, whatever form that is, and starting to get familiar with what your numbers are and really starting to connect your symptoms with your numbers. So it's like, oh, you know, that afternoon headache, I'm realizing that my blood sugar is kind of going low. I thought it was because I was staring at a screen all day, for example, right? Or I always seem to get anxious at this time and I didn't realize my blood sugar was going up because I ate a breakfast that was spiking it, right? So starting to connect the symptoms with the blood sugar, that's really important. We want to also look at our fasting blood sugar. Ideally, we don't want that to be too high. The doctors will say under 100 is good. I say between 70 and 85 is ideal. If you're outside of the country, just divide any number that I'm telling you by 18 to get the millimoles. I'm going to be speaking in milligrams per deciliter. We do things weird here in the States. So that's one metric you want to look for. And then after a meal, ideally, we don't want our blood sugar to be spiking more than 30 points because that is considered for some a spike. Ideally, again, we want to keep our blood sugar below 140 because above 140 is going to start to be inflammatory and we're going to have some repercussions on the walls of the blood vessels. It's going to have these inflammatory cytokines being produced. So keeping our blood sugar stable and not having those spikes is a perfect way to get started with stabilizing your blood sugar. So if you are eating and you're like, well, my blood sugar is going up really high, what do I do? So we need to think about the fact that we have three options for macronutrients. We have fats, proteins, and carbohydrates. And we know that carbohydrates are going to spike blood sugar the most. Protein is a very far second from that. And then fat almost has no impact whatsoever on blood sugar and insulin. So we, knowing that, we want to think about, we need protein as our building blocks. We want to start with a good amount of protein. And ideally, if that protein can come naturally as it does with some fat. So think about a whole egg or ground beef or a chicken thighs, these or salmon. So most often in nature, protein is coming with fat, and we want to eat those two together. That's really important for how we digest it and also for our blood sugar. And so getting those two together and then thinking about if you want to add fiber via above ground vegetables. So non-starchy vegetables are great for blood sugar. They have almost no effect whatsoever. And they will also reduce or dampen that blood sugar spike as well from the fiber. It will slow the absorption of the glucose into the system. And then when it comes to carbohydrates in that category, it's a very big, broad category. And there are a lot of differences in there. We can't just lump them all together. We always want to aim for, when it comes to overall health, blood sugar, sleep, we always want to aim for whole food carbohydrates. So anything that comes in a package, box, bag, even a whole wheat bread is still highly processed. And so any sort of processed carbohydrate, so thinking about like a rice cake over rice or a potato chip over potatoes or a dried mango over a mango, all of the processed forms are going to spike you much more than a whole food carbohydrate. So you can look online for Diet Doctor is a great website that has visual guides to carbohydrates. And you can see how many carbs are in all of these different whole food carbohydrates. And what you can do is eating your carbohydrates last also actually helps to blunt that spike from the meal. So if we save our carbs for last in our meal, then you can kind of figure out, okay, what carbs work and in what quantity to help me not get a big blood sugar spike. And then you're also going to tune into those symptoms. So, oh, I didn't really have a spike, but all of a sudden, like I had those beets and now I can't stop thinking about chocolate. So certain foods, maybe for me, it's grains. Like if I eat rice or oats, I just cannot stop thinking about sugar. So remembering that those foods break down to sugar and they're still going to be impacting your blood sugar. So just figuring out what works for you in terms of what types of carbohydrates should go in there and what quantity. So that's sort of like the do-it-yourself. And this is why testing is so, so important. So that would be the first step to reduce those spikes. We're going to add fats and proteins and some veggies, and that's a great basis for your diet. It's also really important to stop snacking because that's going to keep spiking your insulin. It's going to destroy your digestive tract because your body's never getting rest in there. And so a lot of people can't make it to the next meal because their blood sugar is crashing. So making sure to focus on those fats and proteins to help push that meal even further. So maybe instead of having to have three snacks in a day, you only have to eat one snack and your three meals. So ideally, we want to go longer and longer between meals. So having bigger meals, we want to make sure that we're eating at least 3 to 4 hours before bed. This is really important for a lot of people. Some people, again, I get a lot of people with reactive hypoglycemia, they can't make it through the night. Yeah. So something small at night, perhaps like a fat and protein, just like a small thing right before bed can help to stabilize some people so they're not having those nightly wake-ups. But in general, we want to be doing that work in the beginning of the day and making sure that we're trying to not be eating so often. And then when it comes to fasting, fasting can be great for our blood sugar, but a lot of people will skip breakfast and they'll do a heavy meal at night. So let's say they're doing two meals, they'll eat at like 1 p.m. and then 7 p.m. and they're eating two-thirds of what they're supposed to eat for the whole day, like right at night. And it feels like it's probably too heavy for the digestive tract. I know my Oura Ring will always yell at me. It tells me, oh, did you eat too close to bed? I'm like, yeah, how did you know? It knows. It knows. And so I notice a huge difference in my sleep scores when I eat too close to bed. So that's something else we can do if you're doing a fasting where you're skipping a meal. You want to move that fasting window earlier in the day, which is more in line with our circadian rhythm. So at least 3 to 4 hours before bed. So those are some quick tips.
Yeah, no, this is so helpful. So actually related to that. So for instance, just yesterday or no, the other day we had a group call and there was one participant on there who was really grateful to have the permission to kind of graduate from the nighttime eating. So kind of doing that trick. So I'm hoping you can help break us in. Which people does it make sense to kind of have this snack before bed to help stabilize? And when can you graduate from having your last bite of food earlier and then fasting throughout the course of the night? So I asked this because this participant was saying for an extended period of time, she was doing that kind of, you know, almost like Band-Aid or ways to help keep her stabilized throughout the course of the night. And then more recently with CGMs and different things, she was able to, what she feels, graduate to stopping her last bite of meal earlier and being done throughout the course of the night and then feeling less kind of heavy the next day and what have you. How do we break down understanding that? And then a lot of people get confused because then it's like, well, I thought we had the circadian call out, but now we're eating at night. Like, how do we think about that? When does it make sense for us to have like a little snack or not?
So I would say the only reason why a person would need to have something to eat right before bed is if they're waking up in the middle of the night with a blood sugar crash.
Yeah.
So this would be evidence on a CGM. Sometimes on CGMs, and it's so important to call out because I get this question all the time.
Yeah.
It looks like you're crashing in the middle of the night because you can be laying on the meter and it's cutting off blood flow. So it's not really cutting off blood flow, just to the meter. So if you're not waking up with symptoms, if you're not waking up with that pounding heart, waking up hungry, a lot of people need to eat in the middle of the night too. I see this, and that's a blood sugar thing as well. And if you are not waking up feeling like you haven't slept at all. And so if you're seeing those crashes and on the CGM and you feel terrible, you're waking up, you feel terrible in the morning, chances are you are crashing. And that would be an indication that you may need to eat something, maybe some fat and protein to help stabilize you. Some people need to add carb to that. And that would be the only reason why someone would need to eat before bed. And if you're not crashing, then that would be a reason that you could start maybe bumping it up a little bit earlier, playing with lowering the amount. And as your blood sugar starts improving, you feel more stable during the day, you feel less need to snack, your hunger becomes less urgent, you can kind of skip a snack during the day, you feel like you have more leeway, you're not thinking about food as much. These are all signs that your blood sugar regulation and insulin resistance are improving and that you might be able to take out that snack.
Okay, that's really helpful. Mm-hmm. And I have a question for you around, and this is something that I've been testing with, so I'm curious your thoughts on those times when we deviate. So hopefully we're doing all kinds of things and we're often kind of Pareto's principle, we're managing our blood sugar, things are really working. And for those times, and I know certainly for sometimes people listening, they want to be able to whatever, indulge on, I don't know, 4th of July or whatever the heck it is. So during those times, do you have suggestions on how to kind of manage that, hack that, to use the sort of term, that how do you think about that when you, it's likely that you've kind of created a bit of that roller coaster for yourself, even though you don't normally do that. So for myself, when I've traveled and I know that I might be eating later and it's the types of foods that I don't normally eat, and there might be more spiking, or maybe I'm having a drink, which usually doesn't happen that often, you know, but on the rare occasions when all that does come about, how do you kind of guide people to help band-aid some of, or mitigate some of the effects of that?
Yeah. So we can just use some hacks, kind of some blood sugar hacks, if you will. So apple cider vinegar before a meal or some of those capsules can be really helpful for reducing a blood sugar spike. I happen to have this right here. It's called Good Idea. It's a seltzer water that helps to reduce blood sugar spikes. So that's really socially appropriate. It's great to bring with you 4th of July barbecues, gatherings,
you've introduced me to that company, and that's been a really cool extra resource to know about. So that's perfect. Yeah. Do you often bring that in too, if you know you might deviate a bit? Okay.
Yeah. So if I'm going to a party, I will absolutely bring a Good Idea with me, and I'll have that during the course of the time that I'm there, that I'm eating, and it will reduce the blood sugar spike a bit. The other thing is, we already talked about saving your carbs for last.
Yes.
So if you're going somewhere and you know that there's going to be a lot of food out, you could even, some people have eaten some broccoli and protein before they leave the house. And then, so it's like you have some buttered broccoli, you have your fats, your fiber, and have a little protein. And then you have some maybe apple cider vinegar, bring a Good Idea. And then you go there and then you can have some carbohydrates. Walking and doing any sort of activity is going to be really great for bringing your blood sugar spikes down. So after you eat carbohydrates, if it's something where, okay, we have a hike plan for today, or maybe I'm at a picnic or something and I could go take a walk around the lake after I eat or something. So getting movement in where appropriate, where you're able to. I mean, I have had a CGM and been like, oh, my blood sugar is spiking, I'm going to run to the bathroom, and I go do like bust out a bunch of squats.
Yes, I've done that too. I've done the airport, you know, when it's like
walking up and down the airport. So, I mean, all of those things are really helpful. And then, you know, choosing things that are, you know, if you have alcohol, just being mindful of having a mixer that's not going to throw you over the edge, doing like soda water with your mixer. Eating food with alcohol is going to also help, especially if you have blood sugar crashes, you really want to stay away from that. Having the hard ketones instead, which are actually really good for your blood sugar. And just one of them doesn't really impact your sleep, which is great. And
for anyone listening, that's like an alcohol option. So both Danny and I are big fans of hard ketones. So it has a little bit of alcohol in it, but it's ethanol free. And it's not like we don't have any stake per se in the company. We do have different promo codes, but besides
I don't have one yet. Yeah.
Oh, see, there we go. So, you know, it's just genuinely like the two of us are always trying to find alternatives, like just other options so that you can still engage in the world, but not feel like crap the next day. So that's a great option too. Okay. Anything we missed with that as far as hacks or things that you...
Just the other thing is I usually say one of the hacks that I have is no naked carbs. And that would just be a carbohydrate by itself. So chips and salsa, perfect naked carb, just bread at a table. So a lot of these things that they're putting, you know, if I were a restaurant owner, knowing what I know about blood sugar, it would be like, how can I get people to eat the most food possible? It's start them off with a carbohydrate. So you don't want to do that. Save that for last. Save the chips and salsa for last.
Yes.
And don't eat them by itself, even if it's a healthy carbohydrate. So like, oh, I'm going to have a snack of a banana in the middle of the day. Not a good choice at all. Go for something less sugary. Pair it with something that has some fat and protein to lower the blood sugar response. And yeah, that should help.
Oh, that's great. And quick question too. We have a lot of kind of biohackers or people that are tracking and have different wearables, and they'll have questions about a couple of things, where to put like sauna use, workouts, some of these times where they'll see that there's even, I know you mentioned you had a participant in one of your classes that even just a hot shower would kind of spike them. So like some of these things, how do we think about that? Or do we need to shift how we're thinking about maybe all spikes or not? Bad. How do we navigate that?
Yeah, that's a really good question. Very important question. So oftentimes we know that stress will spike our blood sugar. So I think that's an important thing to call out. It's the most underappreciated, underestimated cause of blood sugar spikes and blood sugar dysregulation is stress, whether that be an acute stressor. So one time I was rushing around to get ready for work and I saw my blood sugar shoot up and I was like, oh my goodness, that's so crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then the chronic stressors will tend to elevate our blood sugar over time more as a whole, as opposed to one spike. But when we look at the body, these things like sauna, cold exposure, exercise, they are stressors. They're hormetic stressors, but they are stressors. So if our body is strong enough to handle these stressors, it will adapt and get stronger. So that spike, that stressful spike of the blood glucose that we are going to get from exercise, hot and cold exposure, to name a few, those aren't bad things if your body can handle it. If afterwards you're crashing and you don't feel well, you know that that stressor was just too much for you. But if you're a generally healthy person, you're in this biohacking space and you get a spike from exercise, that's fine. If you recover from that well, chances are it's going to improve your glucose sensitivity for the rest of the day and for the future as well. So we see this same trend with ice and heat and exercise. So even though you're going to get that spike, it's not a bad thing. And it's not a bad thing to spike in the shower unless you're someone with reactive hypoglycemia who's like, I can't take a shower without my blood sugar crashing. So unless you're having the crashes where you're not feeling well, it's good to go.
Ah, okay. Really helpful. So it's not as if we should strategically like harp on or how much we're spiking, what time we're spiking. Those are going to be helpful in the long run for us.
Yes, absolutely.
Cool. Okay. So one, anything that we left out in this topic of sleep and blood sugar, kind of awareness management, anything that you want to point to that we didn't touch on?
One of my favorite things that has helped, it helps both sleep and blood sugar. So I thought it deserves a call out is,
yeah, please.
And I know that you said that you haven't tested this officially, but I have just seen just some, you know, data from my personal Oura Ring, some of my clients, that castor oil packs are so helpful for, it's helpful for sleep because it's helpful for your liver, and which is going to help your blood sugar. It's going to help your sleep. So I saw fewer wake-ups when I wore a castor oil pack before bed. And I just think that it's such a great strategy. It also helps you digest your fats better. So it's just one of those things that it's like this old school thing that, you know, our great grandmothers used to use, but the pack itself is just putting some castor oil on this cloth. You tie it around your liver, which is on your right side rib cage. And I just wear it before bed. Sometimes I wear it throughout the night. And there are just so many benefits to it. And it's just, people will report much better sleep. So it's subjective, but also I got some, you know, objective data on my Oura Ring. So I feel like it's worth a shot if you are struggling with blood sugar and or sleep. So something fun to try.
I love that. That's definitely something that not a single person on this podcast has mentioned. So I appreciate you sharing about that. And actually it's underscoring because I, you know that I just moved. So I need to pull out a lot of different things. It's kind of underscoring to make sure I find that because I need to bring that back into my rotation. And so I appreciate you sharing that because a lot of the things, and also it's not like that's going to break the bank. You know, it's something that you can just kind of make as a nice self-care ritual to bring in, test it for yourself, see what possible shifts could come from that. It's a quite affordable hack, if you will. And if nothing else, it just gives you a time throughout your evening to kind of wind down, take some time for yourself. So I really appreciate that one. Good call.
Yep.
Well, so we might learn some other things from you specifically on how you are managing your sleep. So for our four questions that we ask everyone, very curious your responses. I'm sure they evolve and you're always like learning and trying different things. So curious what the latest is. But the first question is, what is your nightly sleep routine looking like? Maybe it involves castor oil, but let us know what we would see.
Yeah. So typically I, on an ideal day when I get everything together and I'm able to do this, it starts with seeing the sunset. And then after the sunset, I will put on my amber colored blue blocking glasses. And I do, this isn't a good thing, but I'll usually watch some TV with my wife. And then when I put on my pajamas for the night, I'll put on my castor oil pack. So then we'll watch some TV. I try to get off screens. I'm not great at it. So this is maybe a little bump in, in the, you know, a nudge to get off my screens earlier.
Yes, and totally.
Then, yeah. And then at night, when I do get into bed, I use earplugs. I have every single day since freshman year of college when I was 18. So I've used earplugs. I use a sleep mask every single night. Again, since I was 18, I use my mouth tape. And then sometimes I'll sleep with the castor oil pack and I have a very dark room. My mom has always called it the cave. Even when I was a kid, I was like taping my blinds closed because there was a crack of light. I had a Lisa Frank sticker that I put over my TV and I colored it with black Sharpie. I had a VHS tape up against my VCR because that had a light at night. So I was doing this stuff from when I was little.
Amazing. A biohacker from the womb. Fantastic.
Yes.
Okay. And I can also attest that you bring these principles on the road with you when you travel. So it's not like it's just a free for all. You do all of those things as much as you possibly can, you know, in hotels or what have you. So really cool. And then for your morning routine, what might we see there and how that can connect with sleep?
Yeah. So getting morning sunlight is really, really important. So the first thing I do is I try to get up with the sun. I haven't been super successful since this time change. I don't like this time change. I want to go back to the old time. And so I usually get up around the sunrise and I get out first thing to get some sunlight into my eyes. And that's number one. Sometimes I'll step on the grass and try to, you know, do some grounding, but it is kind of hard in Florida. There's a lot of ants and there's a lot of bugs. So that doesn't always happen. And then I feed my cats, play with my cats because they need to be played with. So that's my morning routine. And I drink mostly decaf coffee because the caffeine is something that spikes me. And so I definitely like to use mostly decaf. And then sometimes I'll do Rasa coffee alternative, which is like adaptogenic herbs for your adrenals. I turned you on to Rasa. We love it.
Certainly do. And it's so funny because, and will you help me also just like make it a doable thing? So I had heard about it in the past. I'd even gotten their packets, but they just sat there because I was like intimidated by the French press and the whole thing. And just occurred as like a whole to do. And you helped me be like, no, it's not scary. Just do it. Like, and then you got me the mug, which was so cool, like such a great present. And so that has just been such a nice addition. So anyone who feels like, oh my gosh, you know, the idea of having alternatives or coffee alternatives can feel like a lot, but there are so many great products on the market to maybe have like a hybrid. So it doesn't have to be so dramatic where you have no caffeine, but you can have low to no or lower ring. So that can be really helpful. And I love what you shared about the fact that for some people that can spike you if you are having caffeine. So that's why another reason why it's so important to test to see what are some of the triggers for you. And so then you can kind of be in charge of that. So really great call outs. And then the next one would be, what might we see on your kind of nightstand or proverbial nightstand if you're traveling?
Yeah. So all those sleep things, my earplugs, my sleep mask, my mouth tape. Yes. And I'll always tell my wife, hold on, I'm getting my gear on. She calls it my gear. It's like, thank you that for loving great. Me because I look probably like a crazy person. There's also castor oil packs that you can put on your eyes. So a sleep mask that you put on your eyes. I don't do this all the time, but sometimes, and there's extra benefits if you have it around like the eyebrow area and on your eyelashes, it can help regrow hair, but there's also other benefits connected to the liver. I can't even remember all of these things. So I have that, the castor oil there. And I also have a reading light. That's like an orange ambery light.
Yes.
And great. Even though I am not really good at using that because into audiobooks, but that's yes. There and some books.
Fantastic.
And a click light. This is a really fun we have a red light in the bedroom. That's on my wife's nightstand, not mine. But the red light bulb in there is helpful for nighttime. And then click lights are awesome. So you don't have to turn the switch. So I have a little remote click light.
Yes. I love those. Absolutely. Anything that can be portable. I know when we were traveling, the little like hockey puck style red lights, love those motion lights, and you can turn those on off. And the click lights are fantastic. So for anyone that wants to have some more of a portable option and then just something to walk you to the bathroom and not have to then have the bright shuttle light and impact your melatonin production, really, really great. And then the last question would be, what has made the biggest change to your sleep game or maybe the biggest aha moment as you're managing your sleep?
So I would say earplugs are like, I just don't sleep without earplugs. I know you like a noise machine and I like silence.
Yes.
And so I feel like I don't think I could sleep. Like sleep is brought to me by my earplugs. And so it's just so important for me.
You should be sponsored by this.
I should be sponsored by Max earplugs. I know. I can't sleep without them. And I love the silence. I like the sensory deprivation, but yeah, I would say that that's probably my biggest one.
I love that. Well, amazing. Thank you so much for kind of just sharing. Also, I guess that's one of the things that I really appreciate about some of the work that you're doing is that you're really sharing your own personal experience and what you are experimenting with, what's working, what's not working. And it's not as if you're someone that's saying, oh, I've got it all figured out, I'm just done, because I'm right there with you. Like, we want to continually test different things and play with different things, but also share some of our fallibilities and some of the things that like, oh yeah, you know, I'm still working with the TV at night. I often share with my group, with our groups that we work with, as far as sleep optimization, that for me, it's like the thought timing piece and the nighttime, you know, kind of some of the things that you're engaging with and not engaging with. And by vulnerably sharing that, I just think it's so helpful because people, it's like the humanization process of all of this is, it's an ongoing thing. So I really, really appreciate that. And because of that, and because you are so fun to follow, how can people follow you? Because you're putting out lots of great content. What are the best ways?
Yeah, thanks. I hang out a lot on Instagram. So my handle is Danielle Hamilton Health. I made it nice and long and hard to spell for everybody. And my podcast is Unlock the Sugar Shackles. And my group coaching program is called Blood Sugar Mastery. So we work in a group format, kind of like your program.
Yes.
I was happy to inspire you to go group.
You did. Because... she inspired me to go group because I was so like, oh, you know, listen, we do one-on-ones and I don't want to lose the effectiveness of switching from one-on-ones to the group. And now I am a total convert for the group. I think that so much more value can be given and it's just amazing. So
it's so great. You get so much more contact time with everybody and then everybody's supporting each other and we're working through things together. They're inspiring each other. They're holding space. Or even just commiserating with each other, because sometimes you just need to be like, this is hard. This sucks. And I just want a pity party right now. And that's fine too.
Because at least you're still in the conversation of it. I mean, and to be around like-minded people that are thinking about these topics just in general, prioritizing it and important to them, and the vulnerability to sometimes say like, oh, you know, I want to just whatever, have ice cream and cake and whatever, but to have that thrown out there, but then to also, you know, have healthy alternatives or steps to take, or sometimes fall off and get back on course. So yeah, really, really good points there. And you also have a fantastic newsletter that you're doing consistently. So if anyone wants to kind of follow you on all these different platforms, all the different ways of consuming information on something that's just so crucial. And I think more and more people are getting in this conversation thanks to wearables and some of these different CGMs and what have you, that you provide a lot of just actionable tips that people can start practicing and playing with like today, now, which is really just a cool thing.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. My newsletter, you can get on that if you go to my website, DanielleHamiltonHealth.com.
So, amazing. Yeah. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to be here. I so, so, so appreciate it.
Yeah. My pleasure. It was so much fun.
Awesome. You've been listening to the Sleep is a Skill podcast, the number one podcast for people who want to take their sleep skills to the next level. Every Monday, I send out something that I call Molly's Monday Obsessions, containing everything that I'm obsessing over in the world of sleep. Head on over to sleepisaskill.com to sign up.